translation. Activities dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if performed in small measure, never go in vain. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being the Supreme Father, is naturally very dear and always ready to act for the good of the living entities. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 2.40, the Lord says, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobayat. This dharma, devotional service, is so important that even if performed to a very small, almost negligible extent, it can give one the supreme result. There are many instances in the history of the world in which even a slight service rendered to the Lord has saved a living entity from the greatest danger. Ajamil, for example, was saved by the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the greatest danger, that of going to hell. He was saved simply because he chanted the name Narayan at the end of his life. When Ajamil chanted this holy name of the Lord, Narayan, he did not chant knowingly. Actually, he was calling his youngest son, whose name was Narayan. Nonetheless, Lord Narayan took this chanting seriously, and thus Ajamil achieved the result of Anta Narayana Smriti, remembering Narayan at the end of life. If one somehow or other remembers the holy name of Narayan, Krishna, or Ram at the end of life, he immediately achieves the transcendental result of going back home, back to Godhead. Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the only object of our love. As long as we are in this material world, we have so many desires to fulfill. But when we come in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we immediately become perfect and fully satisfied, just as a child is fully satisfied when he comes to the lap of his mother. Dhruva Maharaj went to the forest to achieve some material result by austerity and penance. But when he actually saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he said, "I do not want any material benediction. I am completely satisfied." Even if one wants some material benefit from serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this can be achieved extremely easily without hard labor. And therefore, the Shastra recommends, Akarma sarvakamova mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam. Whether one desires everything or nothing, or desires to merge into the existence of the Lord, he is intelligent only if he worships Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by rendering transcendental loving service. Bhagavatam 2.3.10. Even if one has material desires, one can undoubtedly achieve what he wants by rendering service to the Lord. Amagyana Tramandasya Ganantana Shalakya Chakshumi Taminatas My Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born blinded by the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual masters are opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I therefore offer my humble obeisances unto them. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upstaya Bhutale Srimate Shivaram Swami Nita Namane. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upstaya Bhutale Srimate Hridayananda Goswami Nita Namane. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upstaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nita Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashkita Dishtarane. Narayanam Namaskrita Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamadivad. Nashta Prashu Badrashu Nityam Bhagavata Seviya Bhagavatiratama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Nashtaki. Vani Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Gaudadaya Pushpan Vanto Chitra Shando Tamo Nado Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langaiti Girim Yad Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurundina Tarnam. Navama karma kalpopi vipala yeshvararpitaha kalpate purushasyaiva sahyatma dayato hitaha. Activities dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if performed in small measure, never go in vain. Supreme Personality of Godhead, being the Supreme Father, is naturally very dear and always ready to act for the good of the living entities. Give a full foundation, I'm going to read a little bit from the purport of Akarma Savrakamova. It's a very well-known verse that we should all be familiar with. Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text 10. Just this little passage here. Prabhupada says in a purport, influenced by the calm spirit, karma spirit, Arjuna declined to fight in the Kurukshetra battlefield because he wanted to save his relatives for his own satisfaction. But being a pure devotee, he agreed to fight on the instructions of the Lord because he came to his senses and realized that satisfaction of the Lord at the cost of his own satisfaction was his prime duty. And thus he became akarm. That is the perfect stage of a perfect living being. Now, Arjuna declined to fight because he thought, as it says in that purport, that it was in his higher self-interest to not fight than to fight. And then he came to the realization that my highest self-interest is to satisfy Krishna, is to satisfy Krishna's interest. And then mine is a subset of the fulfillment of Krishna's self-interest. Mine automatically will follow. He understood that, and then he adjusted himself and proceeded. And as he proceeded, there was, as it says, Dhruva Nitir Mato Maya. Morality, victory, and incredible power. So the question is, what is good? What is your self-interest? Why is there always this conflict in the material world about what is the good? It says here, it's mentioned in the purport, the good, somewhere there. And what is the bad? And what is the truth? And what is the falsity? There's all these dualities. Why can't there be agreement? The whole world is completely in conflict on every level. You know, we see on global level, on national level, on community level, on family level, and even on individual level. The conflicts are going on inside. People are in duality. They don't know what's good and what's bad. So why is that? And the answer is, it's due to contamination of Maya. It's contamination of the illusory energy. People are in illusion about what is the good and what is the bad, what is right and what is wrong. And, you know, they, from their own perspective, they're very, very, emotionally committed to this understanding of what is the good. You see people campaigning on subjects like abortion, and subjects like, you know, in America, the gun laws at the moment, and on, homosexuality. People will go out there and I'm here to be counted, you know. I'm on this side of the argument. But why is there an argument in the first place? Because there's no supreme authority that everyone defers to. Nothing self-evident in this modern world, because everyone's forgotten God, who is the standard of these things. And everyone's forgotten, so then they've forgotten what the standard is. So the standard is just like a sliding scale. It's like just move the goalposts, you know, whenever you want to sort of, change your opinion. Just move the goalposts and, you know, get fired up about that. It's cause of contamination in the consciousness. That's why people see things differently. Because if they weren't contaminated in the consciousness, they'd all see the truth as being the same. What's true and what's false and what's right and what they'd all agree. If you get a group of people and they're all healthy, they're all sane, and they're all intelligent, and you get this group of people and you put things in front of them, you put a house in front of them, and you ask them, well, what do you see, everybody? They're all going to say, I see a house. And you ask them, you put a man on a horse. What do you see? It's a man on a horse. They're all going to agree. They're not going to say it's a gorilla on a horse unless they're trying to be funny. They're all going to agree what's in front of their eyes. And you put, you know, a lady walking a dog. They're all going to say it's a lady walking a dog. They're not going to come up with some, you know, oh, it's actually, that's Hitler walking, you know, with his German SS troops. And the person is going to say, actually, you're not part of this group because you're a special category. So they're all agreeing because their vision is, they've all got healthy vision, they've all got sane consciousness. So they're all seeing the same thing. That's the gross faculties of perception. But the subtle faculties of perception, the mind, the intelligence, and the ego, if that's all healthy as well, you're going to also see the same thing when it's put in front of you. You'll see the same thing. What's your opinion about this issue? You're going to see it the same. The whole group will see it the same. But if they've got contamination, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, vita rag bayo krodha, it's only when you're freed from attachment, fear, and anger that being purified of me, vitaragbaya krata manmaya mam upasrita, having taken shelter of me, upasritaha, bahavo jnana tapasa, being purified by knowledge of me. So then it says, what is the last line of that verse? Puttamad bhagavata. Bahavo jnana tapasa, purified by knowledge of me, puttamad bhagavata. Therefore I develop my love for Krishna. One develops their love for Krishna. And this is a really kind of awesome point. And the person who's going to give the class tomorrow, in the purport, there's a quote here, Aradhananam Sarvesham, Vishnu Aradhanam Param, Tasmat Parataram Devi Tadiyanam Samacharam. This is Lord Shiva speaking to Parvati, I believe. Aradhananam, Radha means to worship, Sarvesham, of all the different types of worship, Vishnu Aradhanam Param. Param Aradha, the topmost worship is to worship Vishnu. Of all the different varieties, Sarvesham is across the board. That's the highest worship. But then, says Lord Shiva to his wife, Devi, Parataram, higher than that. We know this word Parataram because Mata Parataram Nanyat, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, there's no truth superior to me. So he's saying that there is one worship that's superior to even worshipping Lord Vishnu. And that is Tadiyanam Samacharam, to worship those who love Lord Vishnu. Higher than worshipping, higher than showing your love to Lord Vishnu, is to show your love to those who love Lord Vishnu, because that will please Lord Vishnu more. It'll please Lord Vishnu more to love those who love him than to love him directly. Why is that? And the reason is because Lord Vishnu loves those who love him more than those who love him love him. That's why. That's technical the way I put it, but Lord Vishnu loves his devotees more than his devotees love him. And the reason that for that is because the devotees love Lord Vishnu, love Krishna, more than they love themselves. So that's when I was looking at that, it just kind of, Krishna gave me that kind of understanding that that's what's going on. That's what goes on in love. That goes on in any loving relationship, is you're putting yourself second for this person. You actually love this person more than yourself. It's a really far out thing, super far out thing. That's what makes it work. It's not that, and if you didn't love them more than you love yourself, it means, Prabhupada would say, mercantile arrangement. It's business, you know. You're sort of calculating for your self-interest. You're trying to make the profit for yourself. But where there's love, you're not trying to make profit for yourself out of this person. So that's what we have to do with Krishna. We have to learn to love Krishna. This is all that it takes, actually. Just have to learn to love Krishna more than yourself. And that's incredibly difficult to do because we're so egotistical. You know, we're so sort of have, like it says, we have so many desires that aren't Krishna's desires. But Krishna's very merciful. And so he's it says like a father, you know, he's like a loving father. And so Krishna's guiding us to this standard, of pure love. He's guiding us very lovingly. So, okay, you have these desires, you got to get it out of your system. You know, in the Bhagavatam it says, Paraksho Vado Vedoyam, Valanam Anushasanam, Kama Mokshaya Karmani, Vidate Yagadamyata. That sometimes the Vedas do this thing called Paraksho Vada. They indirectly take you to the stage of loving Krishna. Balanam Anushasana. Balanam means like, in this context, childish. Like Krishna is known sometimes as Bal Krishna, like the child Krishna. It says that childish people, immature childish people, they think that sense gratification is the goal of life, that my self-interest is the goal of life. Immature, childish people think like that. Therefore, kama mokshaya karmani, moksha means to be liberated, Krishna directs them towards their liberation by fulfilling those material desires, but in a religious way, in a pious way, in a way that they become purified of the desires. And it says, in the same way that a father, if he knows the kid's got to take the medicine, the kid's refusing to take the medicine. So in the purport and in the verse itself, it says, so the father will either mix the medicine with a bit of sugar or promise a lolly or something, or some way like that, bribing basically, you know, a means to the end. And so Krishna's doing that with us. He can see we're sort of stubbornly attached in so many ways to certain material aspirations and ambitions and desires. So he bribes us. You can have it. I'll give it to you. You know, but you know, you know, provided on these conditions. So it's conditional. There's nothing wrong with sort of a conditional relationship, provided it's moving towards the unconditional stage. You know, you can't condemn somebody for being contaminated. That's where we, you know, but you can start to, you can start to frown on that person when they're moving from contamination to greater contamination to even greater contamination. They're moving towards more and more material consciousness. One time, Sri Dhananiraj said, there's only three states. There's only three states possible. Alive, dead, and in the middle. We're all in the middle. You know, in the Bhagavatam it says, yascha mudatamo loke, yascha buddhe paramyataha, tavu bosu kamedite krishat yantarito janaha. Yascha mudatamo loke, loke in this world, there are those who are the lowest of fools, muda. Yascha buddhe param, buddhe param, it's like transcendental. And those who are actually transcendental and enlightened. And then it says tavu bog. And then there are those who are caught in between. And it says that the only people who are happy are the ones who are transcendental and enlightened, and the ones who are the lowest of fools. But when he says that the ones who are lowest of fools are happy, it's a kind of a sarcasm there. They think they're happy, you know. The sort of the drunk says, well, I'm having a really great time, you know. And he thinks he's happy, but it's just an illusion. It's a very artificial state, a state that cannot be maintained. But the ones in between, it says, tavubo sukamedete krishyat yantarito janaha. Those janaha, those persons who are caught in between, they must suffer. Because they're intelligent enough to know that they're in it's called an invidious position. An invidious position is like a no-win situation. I've got to get out of this. I'm doomed. A person who's a fool doesn't think that far ahead. They're just thinking, you know, eat, sleep, mate, and defend, or, you know, even less than that. So then the way to become purified is the question. Because otherwise we're going to have this jaundiced vision. We're not seeing what's there. And then we're getting in conflict with other people who see it. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshmi Hanuman Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaura Nitai Ki Jai. How to get purified so that we're seeing what's actually there and then proceeding on the path nicely, the progressive march back to Godhead. And it just basically comes down to taking shelter of the spiritual master. Taking shelter of the person who has learned, you know, this principle of, you know, you love Krishna more than yourself. So this transposed applies also to the spiritual master. That we have to learn how to love the spiritual master and the spiritual master's mission and his desires more than our own. So then the way to become purified of the contamination is to take shelter of some person who loves their spiritual master more than they love themselves. And, you know, that's how the parampara works. That's how the parampara works. So that another confirmation of this is that verse where it says, tata tishtami vaikunte yoginam hridayeshuva tata tishtami narada madbhakta gayanti cha. Something that's not perfect, but it's close enough. Krishna's saying to Narada Muni, I'm not in Vaikuntha, I'm not in the heart of the yogis, I'm not present anywhere except where my devotees are chanting my glories. That's where I'm present. So where the devotee is chanting Krishna's glory, that devotee who's chanting, who's themselves fixed up in Krishna consciousness, and then who's also reaching out to others. If you take shelter of that person, then you're becoming purified by that association. But you have to have faith in that person. It's very much required that you have faith in that person. There's that verse in Bhagavad Gita. It says, Shreya Svadharma Vigano Paradharma Sunustitat Svadame Nida Nam Shreya Paradharma Bhayavaha. That it says that you should perform your prescribed duty even imperfectly rather than another's prescribed duty perfectly. Because if you try to do another's duty perfectly, it says, you should do your own prescribed duty even if you do it imperfectly, because it's better that you become destroyed trying to do your own prescribed duty than if you try to do somebody else's duty. And even if you do somebody else's perfectly, then it's a total failure. It says in the purport here, it mentioned, just as it mentioned the good, it mentions somewhere the danger. So that the danger is that the greatest danger. It says here, Arjamil, for example, was saved by the Supreme Personality Godhead from the greatest danger. So the greatest danger is becoming contaminated and becoming illusioned. Becoming intoxicated by the false ego, that is the greatest danger. Falling down into the lower species, becoming disconnected. So becoming contaminated in one's self identity, that's the greatest danger. So when we take shelter of the spiritual master, someone who is who's not in duality, who understands, who he is or who she is, that they're the servant of Krishna, and that when they're not in duality, then by that association we can also become freed from the contamination and the duality. But the point I was making about this faith, having the faith in them, is very, very important. And how that's that verse I was quoting about destruction is even better in doing your... So following the spiritual master, if the spiritual master is telling you something and you think this isn't right, it's wrong, then it's better that... It's better that you actually have faith and just, clarify it. Of course, if there's some real doubt, you can approach the spiritual master for clarification. But if the spiritual master is impeccable in all respects, and he is firm on his point, then we shouldn't get into mental speculation and say, somebody else said this and I don't think it's right. We can philosophically speculate, which means, okay, he's firm on this point. He's very fixed up. I don't quite see it. But philosophical speculation means you maneuver with your intelligence to try and figure out how it is that what he's saying is correct. Not questioning whether it is or not, not using your intelligence to question whether it is or not, but to actually analyze how it is that he's correct. Prabhupada would say it's mental speculation to say, when the example of Krishna, rasoham apsukontiya, Krishna is the taste in water. So it's philosophical speculation to sort of consider, you know, how it is that Krishna is the tasting water. Not, and it's mental speculation to consider whether Krishna is the taste of water or not. You know, one's a sort of an arrogant position, one's the submissive and sincere position. Because knowledge only comes, it only comes to the submissive inquirer. Otherwise, knowledge cannot be transmitted. It must, the person inquiring must be submissive. In the Bhagavatam, in the earliest part of the Bhagavatam, the sages of Namasharanya say to Suta Goswami that because you are humble and submissive, because of that, your spiritual masters have bestowed upon you all their favors. Because you're humble and submissive, that's why they've bestowed upon you all their favors. And then they say, and therefore, that's the reason why you can scientifically tell us what you've learned from them. That's the science of how enlightenment happens and how purification happens. There was one, recently one devotee told me that he'd watched, I think it was, is there a character called Jackie Chan, does martial arts films, right? He'd watched this Jackie, you've watched them as well, have you? He'd watched this Jackie Chan movie, and there was this kind of very, you know, typical American kind of chip on the shoulder, spoiled brat kind of a character. And he approaches, he's heard about this guy who's the greatest martial arts teacher. And this American guy wants to learn martial arts with a real passion. So he goes to the house of this martial arts guy and comes in and takes off his coat and throws it on the floor and says, right, I'm ready to learn martial arts from you. And the teacher said, okay. You've seen it, have you? The first lesson, pick up your coat and put it on the hook. And so, he's a bit disconcerted, you know, like, you can imagine, just, these American movies are all the same. The kind of emotional nature of the characters are all the same. Huh? Caricature, yeah, but is that what it's called, isn't it? Anyway, he picks it up, and then this devotee said, then he told him, pick it up again, put it on the rack. And he did it again. I don't know how many times he told him to do it, but he did it many times. Then he was upset, and he went home, and his mother said, you know, how was the lesson? And he said, rubbish, complete rubbish, you know, useless, didn't learn a thing. But then he put his coat on the rack when he came home to his mother's house. And his mother kind of went, what? That's out of character. Put the coat on the rack. Something's happening to him. And so then the guy went to the martial arts guy the next time, and he kept on giving this lesson, pick up the coat and put it on the rack. Pick up. And then the guy says, how many times am I going to have to do this? He kind of snapped and got upset. How many times do I have to do this? And then the devotee said that the martial arts guy told him, you're not doing it with the right attitude. And then he says, I want to see you pick up the coat and put it on the rack with a smile. Because, you know, up to that point, he's kind of got this anger and he's putting it on the rack. Is that enough there? You know, this arrogance is still there. The guy knew you cannot teach until the arrogance is gone. There's one classic illustration. I'll just finish on this point. There's one classic illustration of this in the Bhagavatam. When Svayambhuva Manu is being... There's a tug of war, actually, between Narada Muni and Brahma. Narada Muni is telling Swayambhuvamana, stay brahmachari, you know, your meditation is brilliant, you know, you're on your way, just stay put and do your bhajan. But Lord Brahma wants Swayambhuva to get into the management. He needs somebody to do the management of the universe. So this is kind of this tug of war. And finally, you know, because Narada Muni is subordinate to Lord Brahma wins the tug of war, and Swayambhuva Manu agrees to, he agrees to do the management. And then Lord Brahma says, Etavad atma jervirya karya hyapachitir guru shaktya pramater grihyata sadaram gatamatsare. And he said that this is a verse that applies to all relationships of, you know, master subordinate, whether it's father and son or spiritual master and disciple. What he says is that itvadat majerviriya karya hyapachitir guru. He says that he's talking about the attitude, and he said that your attitude is very becoming. He says one who is beyond the limit of envy and who is sane. The word pramada often means mad, so apramada means sane. One who is beyond the limit of envy and who is sane executes the order of his spiritual master to their full capacity. And then the last part is this, in this particular point, the relevant, he says, and with great delight. Because it's the attitude that's important. It's not that you're doing your service, you know, and you're sort of, you know, you're doing it to your full capacity, but you're still doing it out of your sense of ego that I'm the doer and look how good I am. If that's still going on, it's not good enough. You know, Krishna, it means you don't love, you still love yourself more than you love Krishna, you still love yourself more than you love the spiritual master. If you did love the spiritual master more, you'd be doing the service with great delight. Just to be serving your spiritual master would be a joyful experience. Because devotional service is meant to be a joyful experience. So these are some thoughts and some points on the verse. And are there any comments or questions?